Welcome to Innovation in Your Ears. This series follows the founders and businesses on the Level Up Accelerator program. I'm Charlie.
I'm Olu, and today you're going to hear from Gaz at Critiverse. You're going to hear all about his journey, the business, and what's next for them.
Hello, my name is Gaz. I'm a web entrepreneur and game developer. I've been doing it for about 15 years now, and right now I'm taking on a blockchain project. We're making a game called Cryptocraft, so that's what my focus is here in MSpark.
Wow, okay, let's jump straight into that. So tell us a bit about this blockchain project, as you refer to it.
Okay, so like I said, I've been making web games for 15 years, and along has come blockchain technology, and it's opened up lots of interesting new things you can do with web games. So people can have items in their games, what we're doing is we're making a whole suite of little games, and you can use your items in all the different games that you get. And because it's stored on the blockchain, it's like you fully own it in your digital wallet. We're not holding it for you. Like, you can take it out of one game and into the other. We're trying to make interesting and creative ways you can use that.
So, and what kind of games are these? Who are they for? Who's playing them?
Okay, so they're fun little mini games. The overall project is called Critocraft, and it's based in the Critiverse. Well, the main thing people are doing is they're crafting critters.
Is that a critter, like a little animal?
A little cute animal. So we sell ingredients in packs, and then they combine them together to make their cute little animals. And then they can play these games with them. So the idea is that you're going to make a collection of these little critters that you love, and then you're going to have lots of opportunities to play with them in different ways.
Awesome. And then does it matter what, does it make a difference what you feed, like what goes in to create the critter?
Yeah.
Does that have an impact?
So we're making part of why the project's quite ambitious is we're making lots and lots of critters, and you can craft the critters further. So say you have like a goozy critter and a flying critter. You can craft those together again to make a flying goozy critter.
Okay.
And then you might craft him with like a fire critter, and then it's like all those elements combined.
So the critters keep evolving, you can like they just layer after layer really.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And are there incentives for creating more critters? Is it purely for the fun of it, or is there an incentive within the game to do that?
Well, all of the recipes are secret. So the only people who know about them is us when we set them. So
right.
People will be trying to discover new recipes and invent new critters. And if they manage to do that, they get an achievement called they're a registered critterologist at that point. So like there's an incentive in that sense that you get bragging rights that you invented so many new critters. But also when you play the games, their attributes will come in useful as you play the games. So you can try and evolve critters which you think will be good in the game you want to play.
Tell me a bit more about that.
We're making a whole bunch of different games, so the whole thing's experimental, so we've not got like rigid things in place, but we're experimenting. Like, we've got a shoot 'em up game coming, we've got just like a little puzzle game where you've got spread goos around the map coming.
So by mixing certain ingredients together, you'd get a critter with different traits.
Yeah.
And some of those, the end critter will be better at certain elements within the game, is that right?
Exactly, yes. You want to further upgrade and craft your critters. So over time, we'll release new packs of ingredients, and you can combine them to improve your current critters or make new critters. And it's not just, we'll also make games where you don't just need one critter, you need a bunch of them. In that case, then you can craft a whole little team of critters that you want to use.
Wow, okay. That sounds really interesting. And where are you at today? What's the state of the game, users, etc.?
So we've fully coded all the back-end stuff to manage the crafting of critters. We've also got a training system, so you can train and improve your critters.
Oh, wow.
And we've got like a quest system that's all built in the back-end. We're on the brink of launching it, to be honest. And then in addition to that, we're experimenting with the game ideas and how you would use them. So we're really, really close to launching these things. But in the meantime, we've been releasing what we call stickers, which people collect these sticker NFTs, again on the blockchain, and if people have a full collection of stickers, they're the first people to get the new ingredients when we drop them.
Right, okay.
So we've already built up a community of people doing that and enjoying making the sticker collections. So we've got the ball rolling, and we're about to release the good stuff really soon.
Yeah, and how many people are in that community? Is it local, is it regional, global?
Yeah, well, the hub of it is our Discord server, and I think there's about 2,800 people there
right now.
Yeah.
And it's spread all over the place.
Yeah, all over the place, totally.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, awesome. How did you get into this? How did you get into the games and game development world?
I started doing it. I dabbled in my spare time. So I first started back when Flash games were really just taking off, and it seemed like anybody could make a game and put it on the internet.
Yeah.
Most of them would flop, but some of them would just be wildly popular. And I decided I wanted in on that, and I started following tutorials and making my own little games. And the first one I made actually was really popular. It got hundreds of thousands of plays. Wow. And I was just hooked since then. Then I made a load of flops in a row. Then I made a much, much bigger game.
So when did all this start? Was that when you were kids at school?
I was in university at the time.
Okay.
So I was always interested in games. I remember back when I was in school, I did make a text adventure game, but that was like just a little short, you know, tried that. I never really did much with it with games after that.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, back in about 2009, so I was in university at the time.
Were you studying something to do with?
No, I was doing, I'd done an electronic engineering degree, and then I was doing a PhD, which was mostly in biochemistry.
Right.
Okay. And I was finding it really hard. And then this whole fun world of games was opening up to me, and I really got sucked into it.
So instead of doing research and sitting in the lab, you're playing and building games,
basically. I'd set up these experiments that took 12 hours, and I had to press a button every 5 minutes, so I couldn't go anywhere. I was stuck. And there's only so much biochemistry stuff you can do, only hours of biochemistry stuff you can do before your brain gets smashed down. And then I just start doing tutorials and making these fun games, and I just got absolutely hooked on it.
Yeah, wow. So how many games did you... Is that part of freegames.org that you also...
No, originally my website was called thegamehomepage.com.
Okay.
And I made... In total now, I've made about 100 games. Back when I was doing Flash games, I think I was up to about 75 or something.
Yeah. And obviously, there was issues with Flash.
Yeah.
And what happened? Like, did things just...
That was really bad news for the game homepage. So it started with Apple saying they're no longer going to support Flash in the future. And then everyone joined in suit. And then, Flash was decided it was going to be discontinued. So as you can imagine, I just said, I made a catalogue of 75 games in Flash. And they were like the core of my website and what brought people to it. And the website in total, it had like over 1,000 games on it. And all of that was just going to stop working for everybody. So my business was looking in a bad shape then. And revenue just dropped and dropped and dropped until it wasn't sustainable as a business anymore.
And how are you making revenue on those people? People paying for the games?
Adverts. Everything I've ever made is free.
Yeah, okay. So it's all totally free for the user, but then there's adverts and marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. So I'm intrigued. All founders at some point have setbacks and challenges that sometimes are not foreseen, or industry changes. So for you, that's quite early on in your sort of, I guess, business career, that business journey. You've big setback. Flash is going to be discontinued.
Yeah.
What happens next?
Okay, so I realised if I want to keep doing this, I had to get a part-time job because I needed money still. And I realised if I wanted to get this going again and making money, I had to use a completely different approach. And what I did is I bought the domain name freegames.org. It was about £35,000, I think, with the express goal that I was going to try and get it to the top of Google for the search free games.
Okay.
That's a really ambitious goal. The domain name freegames.com, I think, sold for about 1.6 million, so 35k was a bit of a cheap breakabouts from that. But if you search for free games, you'll notice most of the tech companies in the top 10 are $1 billion companies. So I was going to do it in my spare time alongside my part-time job
and try and
get up there. So I had the advantage of the name as much as a search, but everything else I had to figure out myself, and I achieved it. And instead of Flash games, it's got HTML5 games, and every single game on the site works on mobile or computer, since I realised that there was a lot more mobile internet going on at that point.
Yeah. And tell us a bit about free games then. Where is that today? How many users? Who's playing these games? Give us a bit of context.
Okay, so I made freegames.org, and I was trying to rank better in Google, and I realised that Google, I did a big SEO course, and I did everything I could on the page to try and make it rank better in Google. But I realised that Google also, it's really smart these days, it looks at statistics like how long people play on the page, and like how often they return, and this kind of thing. So I realised what I need to do is make it a really good experience where people will play a long time. And the key for that for me was when I did market research. So I'd been making these games site, making games I thought was cool and what I wanted to make for ages. But at this point, I really turned it around and started asking the small amount of visitors I was getting to the site what their favourite games are. I was digging into the analytics, and I was just trying to figure it all out. And straight away, the first questionnaire I did blew my mind. So I figured online games, I thought it's mostly going to be teenage males playing there. And then the first questionnaire I did, it turned out like 70% of the visitors were female, and was it 50% were over the age of 65.
Wow, okay. And a totally different.
Yeah, and again, 70% were over the age of 55. So it's like, oh my God. So I was looking at the page after that, and I was thinking, all the games are things about crashing cars, like fighting monsters. And that demographic isn't into that at all. So as soon as I realised who they were, and I started asking them what they want to play, I adjusted the website. Now you'll see it's full of things like solitaire games and mahjong games, which they really enjoy. And the time on the site went up, the return visits went up, and my Google ratings went up. And it was about a year after I did that market research and started making those changes, I suddenly just jumped overnight from being in the like position 80 in Google for the search to being in the top three. And it's still there today and gets about, it's 1.6 million sessions a month last time I checked, and it's continually growing.
Yeah, so huge traffic, loads of people using this, and yeah, that's incredible. And all like, it's literally just you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. Where does the drive come? Like, what's the driving force behind developing games for you personally?
Well, I always liked being entrepreneurial. I remember back when I was in uni, I did at one time I bought a bulk load of CD players, and then they sold them on eBay for a small profit each time. And I was thinking then that having stock is like risky, and it makes things harder, and you run out of stock, and it's costly. But digital things, you can just make one and sell it 1,000 times.
Scalability, right?
So that's when I started thinking about that. And then originally I tried to make it a website, and then I really fell into this games thing, as I mentioned. And I love games, yeah. But as soon as I had a sense that it could work, I've just been like a non-stop on it ever since for 15 years now.
Yeah. And what is it that hooks you? Is it the trying to solve a problem? Is it the trying to reach more people? Is it trying to make the game more novel? Like, what is it that's you know, gets you up in the morning and keeps you going?
I think I'm really good because I've got quite a good balance of what drives me. So some game developers, they just want to make this thing they think is really cool, but it doesn't work as a business at all because they don't really know how to do that part. And then other people are really good at the business stuff, but they're not very good at making the fun game. But I've just seemed to have the two abilities that line up, that I'm really, really excited about trying to reach lots of people and make business sense. And I'm also really, really excited about making fun gameplay. So with those two things combined, it works.
Yeah, and I know you've got young family as well. How do you find, how do you manage to balance? You know, you've got multiple companies. Some are up and running and moving, but need attention. Some are earlier stage and growing. How do you balance that with family life as well?
I mean,
are you balancing it with family life first of all?
Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. Okay. Sometimes I get really into my work. And my wife calls it being in the critterverse, and I'm just obsessive about it at the moment. Yeah, but then having the family, and especially like, because we go do things like rock climbing and walking and all that kind of thing, and having all those things there stops me from going into it too much, and it keeps me a lot healthier. So it's good for me.
So that's your healthy distraction.
Yeah, exactly.
Keeps you balanced and focused, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess having young kids as well, it you know, you can't be with them and not present. It forces you to switch off from the game side of things.
Yeah.
What do they think about everything?
Yeah, they think it's cool. I involve them sometimes. They're my chief game testers.
Yeah, okay.
And
are they harsh critics, or do they love everything?
Yeah, and they come up with loads of ideas.
I bet.
I mean, this generation, because they've all been building things in Minecraft non-stop for years, they're really good at building things and knowing how things should slot together. And you know, these days they play more games than me, so they've got a lot of insight into what kind of things work.
Yes, you almost raised your own product development team.
Yeah.
smart move. Tell me then, in terms of Critiverse, what does the next year or two hold? What's the big maybe challenge or big focus for you?
Business? A big challenge we've had this previous year has been that all cryptocurrency blockchain projects, they're kind of sleeping right now. Nobody's been that interested in them. We had a huge bubble. It went too big and then it popped. And now it's all kind of calm for a while. But we are expecting it to go up again in the next couple of years. And it's not just me thinking that. There's loads of huge companies investing a lot of money because they expect that's what's going to happen. So this year, hopefully, it's going to be, you know, exciting and good news. There's going to be rekindled interest in buying these kind of things on the blockchain. And we've got all these exciting things to launch. So we're going to launch the crafting system, our ingredient packs. People are going to start making critters.
And is there like a product roadmap in terms of rollouts and new features lined up throughout the year?
Yeah, there's an order of them, but we don't want to put dates on them because we're a small team. And everything seems to take a little bit longer than you expect.
Yeah.
But in the next year, we're definitely launching crafting. We're definitely launching games people can play, and it's going
to
be fun.
Yes, yeah, good time to come and get involved.
Absolutely.
And have a play.
Yes, and if you are interested, go to crittercraft.io. And the best thing to do, there's a link to our Discord on there. If you join the Discord, that's where we announce things mostly.
Cool. And Discord, for those who aren't familiar, is like a chat.
Yeah, exactly.
A chat room, essentially.
Yeah, it's like a chat thing, and you can follow different communities, and we've got our own place you can chat with other creator crafters and follow our announcements.
So, guys, you've obviously got you've got an incredible mind in terms of thinking entrepreneurial and thinking of things that are a little bit different. Maybe partly why you've gone into games, but also games has probably reinforced as well. There's a real fun element to what you do.
Yeah.
And no boundaries. If time and money was no issue, what would the next business idea be?
Honestly, I'm doing it. I love what I'm doing.
All in on this.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Tell me then, for budding entrepreneurs, whether it's in your space or a different space, people who are, you know, maybe, you know, sat in their biochemistry lab right now, bored or not sure that this is for them, thinking about setting up a business, what tips or guidance would you give to them looking back?
A lot of people that set up a business put all these barriers that they think before they can start doing anything with it, you know, like, oh, I need a premises and I need these stuff and I need a person who can do this, who can do that. I mean, it's not suitable for every kind of business, but with mine, I could just dabble and make and put things online, and that's what I've always done. I've not waited for someone with the right skills to come along or the money to come along or any of that. I've just got on with it and just started really small. That's everything. It's starting really, really small was the way to go. And I see this with a lot of other game developers, and they're trying to make this really ambitious RPG, zombie, you know, big game with lots of features. But for me making games, I started off making just a little man that runs around and dodges tangerines. You know, it's just starting with the really small things and then build up to the bigger ones.
So just get moving, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what one resource would you recommend to people in that position as well, whether that's a book, a podcast, a TV program or movie? If there's one thing they were going to read or listen or watch, what would that be?
The Lean Startup is quite a good book.
I think someone else recommended that as well,
I think I haven't read it for ages, but I think that's got a whole lot about like minimum viable products and things like that, which is basically something I do quite often as I make the bare minimum to see if people like it before I invest more time in that idea.
Yeah. So similar concept about getting moving with something and then iterating and building.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So similar to that, and in terms of how you're balancing all these different things, especially two successful businesses, tell me what's your top productivity or time saving hack?
I'm quite good with productivity these days. When I first started, I was really terrible for getting distracted. You know, when you're your own boss and you can suddenly, there's no one to tell you or follow up whether you've done things or not. But these days, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't really think about it. I'm just really productive these days.
Do you think that's having kids, that it's forced you to be more careful with your time?
Actually, yes.
Within work hours?
Yes, because my time is more restricted like that. I know I've got to use it well. Yeah. Whereas before, I could, like, you know, all evening I could be doing it, all night I could be doing it, so there was no kind of boundary to where we need to start and stop work. So having those boundaries in place, you know, if the kids are out for school for the day and I'm going to blast through this as best as I can, that really helps.
Yeah, okay, so maybe it's boundaries but also planning things in outside of those boundaries so that the boundaries actually have to stick. Otherwise, as your boss, you can tell yourself you're going to stop at 5 or 6, but if there's nothing else happening, you can easily just extend it, can't you?
Yeah, exactly,
Because I guess with, you know, kids coming home from school and even picking up, there's no leeway there.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And taking off little bite-sized things too.
Okay, yeah, so break it down into chunks.
Yeah, so like, you know, if you say, oh, I'm going to make this game, that's quite a big goal and, you know, you're working on a week and you still haven't reached it. But if you say, I'm going to sort out the enemy system for this game and you can do that in one day, then you can blast through the day and feel really good you've done it and then move on to the next goal the next day. Also, I just thought of another one, is habit stacking, something I learned about recently.
Yeah, go on.
So if you've got something which is a habit, you can stack something onto it. I'm trying to think of an example, but it's like, you know, when you start your lunch break, you will also do this other thing, which is useful. So it's just something you're doing anyway.
So rather than trying to create a totally new habit,
yeah,
you attach it to something where there's already a habit and behaviour there.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's something I've been trying to, because then when you do the thing, or like you say, when I come back from my lunch break, I will go for my inbox, and it's like it's really specific. If you just say I'll go for my inbox during the afternoon, like it's really wishy washy, and you don't, maybe you do it, maybe you don't. But if you say my routine is when I come back from my lunch break, I go for my inbox and make sure it's all done.
So again, it's those boundaries, setting boundaries.
Yeah.
So you
sit down on the desk. It's like this is what I do. It's my habit.
Yeah, okay, and then you just add something onto that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, I like that, really interesting. So, guys, really interesting stuff. I'm intrigued. I'm fascinated by you and some of the stories I've heard. Tell us something that I or the listeners maybe don't know or might be surprised by. Tell us something about you. Tell us something different.
I got a Guinness World Record. That's really cool.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
go on.
But I didn't find out until about 4 or 5 years later.
Oh, wow.
So what it was...
So it's not planned?
Oh, no.
Anything.
No, it just turned up there. And so I'd made this puzzle game called Red Remover. It was really popular. It got played about 130 million times.
Wow.
And because it's a puzzle game, I put a link in the game. Every time you fail a level, it'd pop up and ask, do you want to see the video walkthrough? So it linked to a video walkthrough on YouTube.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I only linked to the YouTube video half the time because they also put the video somewhere else. But anyway, I just had notifications on my phone. I just popped up with a YouTube comment like 5 years later, and someone said, congrats on your world record, Gaz. And I was just typing back, I don't have a world record. And I thought, hang on, I'll Google it. So I Googled my name, Guinness World Record, and I'd gotten it like 4 years earlier at that point. And
so what was the record for then?
For the most viewed video walkthrough game, the most YouTube. Viewed game video walkthrough on YouTube.
So does that mean you're in the book?
I was in the book back in 2010.
Have you got a copy?
Yeah.
Yeah, you kept it? Nice. Yeah.
It's only a very small section.
Yeah.
And then I contacted them to see if I could get a certificate, and they said, oh, we don't do it after 3 years after the record.
Are you? You're timed out.
Yeah, so I've got to bring the book around with me if I want to show somebody. Yeah.
Nice, that's a good that's a good bit of trivia. I like that. Guys, so obviously freegames.org and you've got Critiverse as well, which is the big focus moving forwards.
Yeah.
With loads of exciting stuff there. So just remind us, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you or to get involved in Critiverse?
Definitely joining the Discord server. If you don't have a Discord account, it's quite easy to set one up. And then you can, we're all chatting on there, the community. We drop links to new NFT stuff we're dropping there first. And we tell, you know, progress updates. That's the best place to go.
And how do people find that? And can they just join and sort of say, hey, I'm new, what do I need to do?
Yeah, just join. If you go to crittercraft.io, there's a little Discord symbol if you click that, or you can go straight there by going to the URL critter.link/discord.
Awesome. Thank you very much, guys.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Remember to follow us on all our social media and the businesses featured in this episode.